Monday, everyone. This is Kat Caldwell, and this is episode 226 of the Pencils and Lipstick podcast. Today, I have with me a guest named Lynn Bohart. She is a mystery writer, short story writer. She has done writing in all sorts of areas of life, and we get into that in the interview. But if you are wanting to write mysteries, you're going to probably want to listen to this episode. If you want to hear about her, some of her unconventional marketing tips on being a indie author, you're going to want to listen to this episode. I have the links in the show notes. The book that she mentions that she wrote with her marketing tips is very interesting. I bought it. She has a lot of good ideas in there. As she says, it's especially for people who don't really want to do all of the sort of conventional go out and read your book or wait for people to come to you at the Barnes & Noble, which is, you know, a possibility. The problem with that is every Barnes & Noble is different, so you have to like go one by one to each Barnes & Noble, whatever. I have my opinions about that. But we talk a lot about where she gets her ideas from for her Old Maids of Mercer Island series, how she developed her mystery writing. I think it's fascinating, honestly, because I love mysteries, but I haven't ever dared to write one. And so people who write things much different from me fascinate me. As you guys know, almost every writer fascinates me. So she just has a lot of interesting stories to tell. And I would highly suggest you get on her newsletter, because just a couple weeks ago, she sent one out where like she interviewed a detective. She does some very cool things, which I think you would also learn, like very interesting marketing tips just that way, being on her newsletter and seeing what she's doing to sort of keep her readers engaged with the stories that she is telling. So we also talk about having characters that are not 20-year-olds, which I find awesome and refreshing. There's nothing wrong with having your character be 20 years old, but it is becoming a bit of a trend and a little more popular to have people who are in their 50s and in their 60s, because, you know, we are not dead when we are that age, and we still have a lot of life to live and to give. So if you are writing and you feel shy about having your character be older than 30, please don't. Take a listen to this episode. We have a lot of opinions on why we should have characters of different ages. I would encourage you to go with the age that you think is appropriate for your characters, but don't shy away from having characters that are a bit older. Just like characters no longer have to be, you know, super thin to be attractive, or all these sort of ideas that, you know, just became like the fashion in characters, and they're kind of going away from fashion, and new curvy girls are coming up. Midlife is coming up, second chance, you know, second chance of love is coming up. So there's a lot of things that you can play with and you don't need to shy away from, because the fashion in the author world and in the reading world is changing. So we talk about that as well. It is mid-April, and so I am just fulfilling, you know, getting things done for fulfilling the Kickstarter orders. And I'm continuing to write the historical romance trilogy, sort of finishing that. I'm pretty inspired to be writing. I have refocused my way of writing and my way of concentrating, and I'm really grateful for that. It was definitely needed. My life changes a lot. And so I am trying to find different ways to have more deep work, really concentrated 90 minutes of writing. And that perhaps is only one time a day, but to at least get that one time a day done, because then I have to be with the kids, and, you know, I'll have two high schoolers next year, and summer's coming up, and eighth grade graduation's coming up, and all these things. So, life is always busy, right? So we have to make a way to put our writing in between all the other things. But I'm very excited for this year. I'm very excited for all the writing that I'm doing. Of course, I will also be working on the launch for the Bended Duet, that when it goes wide, when it publishes wide. If you guys are not on my reader's newsletter or my writer's newsletter, please click the link below and get on them. I usually have a lot of reading news in the reader's newsletter and then a lot of writing news in the newsletter. And if you're not on the writing newsletter, you're not getting information about the workshops that we're having. So this month, Beth Barani came in and taught us. And next month, we are writing blurbs together with Madison Michael. So if you are a writer and you want to get some one-off workshops, if you're not really interested in taking a full class from the people that I have come in and who give classes, these workshops are for you. Whether you're in the class and you sort of want to complement them with a specific theme of a workshop, or if you just don't have the time to organize your life around a class, I completely understand that as well. That is why I created these workshops. So every month we have a workshop. Every month it's a sort of different thing going on, different pain point of writing. So you should get on my writer's newsletter. That's pretty much where I advertise the majority of it. I'm doing better on social media, but yeah. There's only so much you can do in a day. All right, let's get into the interview with Lynn Bohart. I will have the links in the show notes below. Check out her books and her marketing book as well. Please share the podcast with fellow writers and subscribe and review it on whatever, podcast place you are listening to this, and enjoy the interview to come. All right, welcome back everyone to Pencils and Lipstick. Today I have with me author, writer Lynn Bohart, and I'm very excited to have you. Welcome.
Hi, hi, Kat.
I'm excited to have you too. You have a wide expanse of writing experience, we'll say, like lots of different things. You are a mystery writer and you're coming out with a new, or you've come out with a new mystery book, but that is not the only extent of your writing expertise. So before we get into that, could you just tell us a little bit of where you're from and who you are?
Well, I've lived my entire life on the West Coast. So I grew up in the Southern California area. Now I'm in the Seattle area. And I have a background in theater. So I have a
Oh, wow.
bachelor's and a master's degree in theater, specifically in directing.
Okay.
And but ended up in the nonprofit world. So I was the executive director for for 35 plus years in the nonprofit world, which involves a lot of writing, obviously, for
Yeah.
fundraising appeals and business reports and things like that. And probably it'd be probably 16 years ago, 15 years ago, I really started writing.
Okay.
I fell into it because I took when I was in Oregon, I took a ghostwriting weekend, which was great fun. And I ended up writing this little short story. And the woman who taught the class came up to me before I left, and she said, "Lynn, you can publish that." And I drove home with my head this big,
Yeah.
thinking, "Oh my God, if I could write a short story and publish it, I could probably write a novel." I mean, it was just ridiculous. And because, as you know, I mean, they are very different.
They're very
And
different.
writing a novel is extremely complicated and time consuming. And so I spent many, many, many years, like most of us, learning, writing drafts and sending them in, and they would get rejected. And it wasn't until I moved up here in the Northwest that self-publishing really
Right.
became popular. And so I
Right.
started researching that, and I kept honing my craft the entire time. And finally, I'm a completely self-published author. So I now have 10 novels published, two short story books, and two nonfiction books. And I teach writing. I have taught writing through Green River College here for over 10 years. And I was doing a lot of that while I was still working. I mean,
Still
I was a
working.
single mom too.
Yeah.
So, I'd write when my daughter went to bed,
Right.
and on the weekends and stuff. I mean, you just have to find ways to do it.
Yeah.
She's now,
Wait.
go
She's
ahead.
now older.
Oh yeah,
What did
she's out
you
of the house and has her own PhD, and
Oh
so
goodness. You did a good job with that one. What did you publish first? What was easiest for you to get out, or what did you
The
sort of?
first book I published was Grave Doubts, which is my only standalone novel.
Okay.
And but you know, I mean, you've heard this, that you should write what you know. I had been the executive director of hospital foundations for many years. So I
Okay.
worked within the hospital. And hospitals are like mini cities in many
Yeah.
ways. You know, they have housekeeping, food services. Back then, we had a printing service, maintenance, public relations, the whole thing, right?
Right.
And so I thought, well, I mean, this is kind of like a little city right here. Why don't I place the mystery, you know, the crime right in the middle of the hospital, which I did. And then I used the resources, the people I knew within the hospital to help
Yeah,
me.
of course.
And so it's the story of a woman, much like myself, who is the an executive on the executive team of the hospital, and her assistant is found dead from an apparent overdose of insulin. And
Whoa.
Lee, the protagonist, knows for sure she didn't kill herself. She and you
Interesting.
know throughout the book you realize why she knows that, because she knows this woman so well. And she decides to start asking people in the hospital, like, how does insulin work? You know, she goes up into the lab, she starts, and obviously she
She
starts,
figures it out.
she tips her hand. Yes, she does, but she tips her hand,
Right.
and you know, they start coming after her. So it's a very intricate book, but you know, and again, as a self-published author, I had never written anything, and
Right.
I was in timber country, and a couple of my board members were connected to lumber mills. So I just called them up and said, "Can I come take a tour?
Nice.
I'm writing this book." And one of the most self-affirming things was that when I went, you know, the imposter syndrome, right?
Yes.
I felt like a complete imposter. I had never written anything except that stupid short story. And when I went for these tours, they would introduce me as an author, and I
Yeah.
was just, it just made me feel so good and so
Yeah.
validated. So that was my first book, and it almost got published. I had an agent that read it three different times, had me make changes, and you know, they're always, you just never know what
Right.
comes across her desk. And then she finally said, "I just can't do it at this time." So that was
What
the
year was
first thing
that? Was that
that happened.
20,
No,
like as the Kindle was coming out, maybe 10
yeah,
years
it
later,
was
so.
like early 2010, 2011, something like
I wonder
that.
if
So
that's when Dan Brown and all those were getting really, really like beyond like
maybe, yeah,
the
I
films and
don't know.
stuff. 'Cause you never know, like you said, you never know why. Clearly they liked the agent liked the book and thought it was marketable,
Yeah.
but it just depends on what their connections are or whatever their boss is telling them. Like they're so.
Well, I see then, so as I said, I wrote what I know. Then I
Yeah.
started a detective series, and it was based in my hometown of Sierra Madre in Southern California. It's in the Pasadena area.
Okay.
And I created a character based on someone when I was living up here in Wenatchee, which is over the mountains here from Seattle. I did a lot of community theater, and I did community theater with a guy who was a wonderful actor, and at the time he had just applied to the police academy, and he
Oh.
got in, he became a cop, and when he became a detective, his schedule wouldn't let him do theater
Oh,
anymore.
right.
And I remember asking him about that, you know, because he had to kind of give up theater, and he's because he was obsessed with theater, and he said, you know, when I became a cop, I didn't feel the need to be on stage anymore. I loved that
Interesting.
concept, that see, it's
Yeah.
that adrenaline rush, right? So
Right.
I used that. I used him as the lead character in my Giorgio Salvatore books, but set in my hometown. So again, writing
Okay.
one new, right?
Yeah.
And then I launched my Old Maids of Mercer Island books, which have been the most popular. They're set up here, set up here in the Seattle area with four older women. Who and it's
Oh.
very snarky, funny.
Yeah.
All my books are paranormal, some spookier than others. The old maids books are funny. The ghosts are funny. There's a talking parrot. The women are just hysterical. They're sassy, they're fun, they're fearless. But underlying it all, For some reason, in this series of books, I decided to include social issues.
Okay.
So I did a lot of research for the first book on sex trafficking, which
Yeah.
I hate, you know.
That's rough.
Yeah, and that's the crime around sex trafficking and black market adoptions, actually. And so at the back of the book, then I write something saying, you know, this happens all over the world. This is an international problem. If you're interested, you know, here's some ideas of where you could get involved. And then the next book was child abuse, and then it was mental health. And so the
Yeah.
most recent book, which is behind me right there, No
Nicholas,
Place
like
Like
home
Home for a
for.
Murder, has to do with homelessness. So
Okay.
that's the sixth book in the series.
Yeah.
So yeah.
So
So
do you.
then I launched my own freelance writing company because
Yes.
when I retired from my nonprofit world, I thought I'd write full time, but that's very isolating. My daughter was gone at that
Right.
point,
Okay.
and so I started my freelance writing company, Little Dog Communications. So now I write for people and not mostly for nonprofits all over the world. So I
Right.
write constantly.
You're constantly, but is that a nice little balance to your writing minds to have like the nonprofit and the fiction?
It
Write about
is.
heavy social issues. Like that must,
Yeah,
the research must
yeah.
be
I
rough.
do. The difference was I noticed I've been retired for about 5 years now, and the first couple of years I didn't do much writing on my books because I was writing all day. You know, when I used to work in an office all day, writing was a solace. You know,
Yeah.
that was my therapy, you know, and I noticed when I wasn't if I took a couple of months off, I'd start getting kind of antsy, right? I wanted to get back
Right.
to writing. Well, once I started my freelance company and I was writing all day,
Yeah.
well, then I'd come home and got, you know, or I was already home. But then when the writing was done, then it was more like, okay, I don't really want to, you know, pick up a book and start writing.
Right.
So it took me a couple of years to kind of get into
Get that
more of
balance.
them in a balance so that
Yeah.
you know, because I had some fans that actually complained that it took me
Really? That's
two
fun,
years. When's
though. That's
the book
good.
coming? When's the next book coming? And it's like, okay, you know.
Oh,
So
that's wonderful, though. Like it must be nice to have that response of like, come on, get this book out
yeah.
just because, I mean, so many of us never really hear from the fans, right? Or
Yeah.
that sort of validation of like, okay, yeah, people are still wanting, because I've talked to many writers and I think that little voice at some point will always say like, does it even matter?
I
Like,
know. I know. That's why we all live for reviews.
yeah.
You know, we, you know, I don't do it so much anymore because I have so many books out now. But for years, I checked those reviews every single day, if not multiple times a day. I was just waiting for that next review to come in because that's your validation.
Yeah, that
Not just that
somebody's
they
read it,
liked it.
right?
Not just that they liked it, but that, you know, yes, you're selling books, but that somebody's actually reading them, you know?
Yes, because how many do we own and we haven't
Yes,
read
yes,
yet?
yes.
Yes, it's absolutely validating and feels good. But I want to ask you, what draws you to mystery? So you did theater, you studied directing. Did you do mostly mysteries when you were in the
No,
theater?
I don't know. It's funny because I don't put puzzles together, you know, like table puzzles, but I like the concept of puzzles. And I think I've gravitated. I did in reading, I spent quite a few years where I was really hooked on, you know, sci-fi fantasy kind of stuff. But then I kind of always came back to mysteries. It's mostly what I watch and it's mostly what I read. And I'm, you know, that short story that I wrote was paranormal.
Okay.
I'm always been interested in the paranormal. And so I married the two so
Okay.
that in every one of the books, there's some paranormal aspect. And there's also a dog because I'm devoted to dogs.
Yes.
And I've even, you know, I foster rescue dogs for many, many years. So in the first book, it's a German Shepherd. In the Detective Salvatore mysteries, it's a basset hound named Grosvenor. He's great. And then in the Old Maids, it's based on my two dogs, so they're two miniature long-haired dachshunds.
Nice.
Yeah, so I don't know. I do write what I like.
Yeah, you're just naturally drawn to the mystery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then,
What can
go
you
ahead.
tell listeners in mysteries, is it specifically that the reader never knows who it is until the end? Is that sort of one of the
You know,
genre
I try for
tropes?
that, and I think my guess is most mystery authors try for that, except for those who, there are some mysteries that clearly that you know who the bad guy is right from the beginning, and so it's more of a thriller based
Yeah.
on that suspense of, how are the two going to come together?
Oh, how are they going to catch them or something?
Yeah, but in the first book, which has always been my most popular in the Old Maid series, it's called In Keeping with Murder, but Inn is spelled INN because she runs a big bed and breakfast up here
Sure.
in the Seattle area, and the main killer is introduced fairly early in the book, and I all the way through I thought, I think people are going to know who it is. But this
Okay.
person, I tried to make this person, I don't want to say the gender, so dislikable that
Yeah, that
my attitude was, even if they guessed who it was, at the end they'd go, yes,
yeah,
because
they got them, yeah.
they wanted that person to get their due. And so I've had a few, I had a lot of readers that have said they didn't guess. And I've had a few
Yeah.
that said they did, but they didn't care.
Yeah.
Most of my other books, they've been surprised.
Okay.
The newest book, I think probably, I would say 2/3 of the way through the book, kind of who's in, certainly who's involved. What has really surprised people is the crime itself, and because that's revealed, closer to the climax, and it's really surprised people, and people called it icky and eerie, and it's based, I won't tell you what it is, I don't want to ruin it for people, but it's based on a documentary I saw on Netflix.
Oh, so real life.
Yes, of
Okay.
two guys that were really doing this, and not very well known, but and this one is that causes homelessness, so
Right.
it's people are being abducted off the homeless people are being abducted off the streets of Seattle, and one of them shows up dead in one of the old maids' houses. She volunteers at a homeless shelter,
Okay.
befriends this woman, and then she's killed right in her kitchen, and Rudy,
Jeez.
this character, is framed. So that's why the old maids get involved. And
Okay.
then they, obviously they're trying to exonerate their friend, but they're trying to find out
What's
why
going
are
on?
people being abducted. They don't
Yeah.
know what's happening to these
Yeah, of
people,
course.
just disappearing. And the fact that homelessness, people move around all the time on the streets anyway. The police don't have, there's no evidence. The homeless people know people are disappearing, but and they're scared,
Right. But
but
it
they don't really
sounds, yeah.
don't know what's happening. So it was really interesting. I do work with a number of homeless organizations, a couple right up here in the Seattle area. So I reached out to them, to beta read my book to make sure I was portraying the homeless
Right.
population in not just not a real sense, but also a sympathetic
Right.
sense,
Not
which I
stereotypical of.
clearly wanted to do.
Yeah. So how do you choose your social issues that you want to sort of confront with the
You know, in
books?
some respects, they've kind of chose me. When
Okay.
I started the Old Maids, I was Janet Ivanovich. Ivan, is that how you pronounce it?
Think
Her
so.
books, the Stephanie Plum. Is that the character? I'm getting really confused here. But anyway,
She's written so many books.
yeah, well, she's a very snarky writer. I loved the snarkiness, and I thought I could do that. So I started, and I'm a panster writer, not a plotter. So I just basically started writing with these older women, and my readers or writers critique group loved it. But I didn't have a story. I had no crime. I had no story. And it took me several years to figure out. And again, I watch a lot of documentaries. I happened to see a documentary on sex trafficking and I went, that's it. That's what I'm going to use. So then I did a lot of more research. And when I wrote that book, because I hate sex trafficking so much, and I had done so much research on it that that's why I wrote the note in the back of the book. And when I did that, readers liked it. And I thought, okay, I'm going to do that again and again and again. So this time, homelessness, just because I do a lot of freelance writing for homeless groups, I thought this is something that needed to be explored. And I already know what the next topic's going to be, and that's the crimes against Indigenous women. Because I'm so tired of hearing about Indigenous women going missing and nobody does anything
Nobody
about it.
does anything.
Yeah, that I'm gonna probably use that.
That I love that you're using things that you're passionate about in life. I think some writers purposely stay away from that. And I was talking to another writer, Susan DeFreitas, and she was like, she was in the university system for a long time and really felt like it was never encouraged to be very passionate and to write about the things that make you passionate, that that's not marketable or it's not, not in a fiction type way. And that surprised me because I thought that at least the university system would encourage
But they're
that
so
sort of thing.
academic. Yeah, they're all.
Are they?
I had to, as my daughter was getting her PhD in psychology, I would review and edit a lot of her papers, and it's just like your eyes glass over and roll up your head. But it's interesting that you should say that. And I listened to part of that podcast with Susan, because one of the things that I work with nonprofits for in freelance writing, I used to do workshops on emotion, using emotion, because, and I remember in one that I gave, this back in the back of the room, this woman raised her hand and she was a grant writer, and she said she'd always been told not to do that,
Interesting.
don't get too schmaltzy and too emotional, just stick to the facts. And but the reality is, if you look at advertising, you look at big movies, they're all, everything they do is around emotion. They milk it for everything they can. And large national nonprofits, if you look at the organizations like ASPCA and those, when they've got those crying dogs, on the TV, they are appealing to your emotion and it works. So it's just interesting that
Yeah,
Susan said that.
like the middle, it's almost like it's almost like a conspiracy theory, where they don't want the little nonprofits. We've always worked closely with really tiny nonprofits, especially like literacy,
Oh,
when we
yeah.
worked in Dallas, when we lived in Dallas, and like tiny nonprofits have a very
Yeah,
hard time
yes, they
getting
do.
money. All the money goes to big nonprofits, and that really gets my social justice part
Yeah,
like bumping,
yeah.
it because they're doing the most. I wouldn't say they're doing the most, but
Well,
it's
they're doing the most
important.
with the most little, yeah.
And they affect individual people. To me, it's like, yes, research, yes, we need all that, but at the same time, you still need local nonprofits helping with homelessness, with sex trafficking, with literacy.
Yeah.
How else do you expect the cycle to not repeat?
Right.
So I love that you're incorporating this into your fiction.
Well, I with the nonprofits I've worked with some big ones, universities and stuff like that, but I work with a lot of small nonprofits. And it's one of the reasons that I chose to do what I do in my freelance company, because I'm retired, I don't have to replace my a full income. So I can reduce my rates, because nonprofits typically don't have the money to hire professional writers. I know that because I ran
Because
nonprofits,
you
right?
ran.
So I purposely, try to work within their budgets, really reasonable rates, so that they can get the help they need, and not break the bank, because they really do struggle. They, you know, yeah.
And it's interesting that they're told not to use emotion because emotion is everywhere, like you've said. And I don't even think, I mean, I think some cynical people would say, like, you know, those commercials are manipulating us, but really what they're doing is trying to stir within us
Oh, yeah.
a passion, you
Yeah.
know, because there's so many problems in the world that you have to, in order to stay mentally healthy, shut down on some of them. And so
Yeah.
they're trying to trigger that point, which one are you going to be passionate about and do
Well,
something,
and
you know?
commercials clearly are trying to manipulate
Yeah.
us. I mean, they're
Poor little puppies.
appealing to our vanity, to, you
Yeah.
know, to our sense of justice, to our whatever. And yeah, so for me, I get discouraged sometimes
Yeah.
because the small nonprofits, like you say, you know, are overlooked
Yeah.
oftentimes, and yet some of them are doing fantastic work, you
Good.
know,
Yeah.
in the lo within the local
Right,
community,
right.
and they really do have a hard time competing,
Yeah.
you know, for the big corporate dollars. And even so, and the thing is that nonprofits are taught to tell what they do. You know, they're always taught this. To me, this is the problem. Really get out there what your mission is, right? And how you serve the community, not why.
Ah, that's
And
interesting.
the why is what the donors are actually interested. I mean, they want to know that you're efficient, you know, you're not wasting money, that you know, that you're measuring your results and all that. But they want to know that your why matches up to their why, you know. In other words, that's that passion, that's the emotion, right? So it's not just how are you, okay, yes, you're getting homeless people off the street. I one of the workshops I did was with a local clothes bank. And this was just so telltale, because as we were brainstorming phrasing and messaging for them, one of their board members said, you know, in terms of what is the clothes bank really, why are you doing what you're doing? And he said, we're restoring dignity. And I went, yes,
Yes.
that's it. That's what you're doing. That's what's going to resonate with people.
Right.
Because, you know, the whole idea of putting on a clean set of clothes, clean underwear, to go to a, you know, to a an interview,
An interview, a
feeling
court date,
confident about
see your
yourself,
kid. Yeah.
and that you feel dignified as a human being. That's, to me, that's the difference in messaging that a lot of nonprofits do.
Yes. But it's interesting, it took them a lot of brainstorming because
Yes.
they're so focused on what they do. But
Yes.
like you said,
Yes.
that
Yeah.
tells the story,
Yep.
right? Like then
Yep.
you can take have you seen Maids? It's on Netflix. It's set up in Seattle and she runs away from an abusive home. And I think that they did quite a good job of setting up no clothes,
Yeah.
no resources,
Yeah.
and just
Yeah.
I love this one scene where she says, "I'm sorry, my minutes expired on my phone." And the rich lady's like,
What?
"What?"
Yeah, really?
And it's
Who does that anymore? Yeah.
that little disconnect of like, who buys minutes? And
Yeah.
just like bringing the rich lady down and being like, "Oh." You know, just like
Well, and see, that's a perfect example. In No Place Like Home for a Murderer, these women are all fairly wealthy women who, Mercer Island is a very posh neighbor, you know, it's an island, so it's not just a neighborhood, but it and so and but they volunteer, you know, they actually do a lot in the community. But to actually go into homeless camps, to go into literally working with it within the homeless shelter, they have to change the lens through which they're
Interesting.
seeing things. And one of the main characters at the end admits, you know, that I kind of look down on people, and you know, and I now realize these are just people. These are people that are struggling to, and the reason when I first moved up here, I went to a Salvation Army dinner, and they had invited an author who had been homeless and written a book called Breakfast at Sally's, and Sally's is the Salvation Army. And he, and it's his story about how he was on the streets for many years and how he got off the streets.
Wow.
And he, so when I not only sat next to him and met him, so I used that in the book that the main character did that, and they end up recruiting an author just like this gentleman that I met to help them. But it, I, when I read the book, it made me feel very differently about the homeless. You
Right.
know, when you're driving past an intersection and the guy standing there with a sign saying anything will help, you know, and he's so decrepit looking, and I'm thinking, yeah, you're just going to take it and drink it. Well, that's what I used to think. Now I keep one, literally keep $1 bills in the
Yeah.
console of my car, and when I'm stopped at the stoplight, I'll hand him a bit, you know, a dollar or two, thinking, I don't care how he, you know, maybe the alcohol keeps him warm at night. You
Yeah.
know, you don't know what they're struggling with, and but for the grace of God, there go I, you know,
Yeah.
because you really don't know if that could be you or someone you know tomorrow. And so that's what the book, you know, even though that's a really pretty heavy duty mystery, you know, cozy mysteries are typically very vanilla.
Okay.
Somebody dies, but it's, you know, it's a neighbor, and there's a jealousy aspect. You know, they're not the, I kind of write the next generation cozy mysteries. So the crimes are pretty heavy duty, but it's all framed around the characters that
Right.
are funny, and the friendships. I'm very fortunate in that I met a film producer through the Seattle Film Summit up here a few years ago, and she's trying to get the books made
Oh, wow.
into movies. So we'll see. But it,
Yeah.
and one of the things that struck her so much was the friendships of these women.
Right.
You know, that they are so loyal to each other, and so yeah, so.
And I love how they're, I mean, I love writing people older than 40.
Yep.
Let's say 25, really.
Yeah.
There's, you know, there's nothing wrong with that, but there are a lot of younger writers, but I think that we just know a lot more, you know, about the world. We might
Yeah.
have a lot more experience on social issues or whatever, and I love that you chose, you know, women that are older that have this friendship. But I also love that they grow, you know, like that
Yes.
they're growing throughout this,
Yes.
that they are
Yes.
admitting, you know, maybe you have a very blessed life, you know, and you've worked hard, but you still haven't had hardships like
Right,
homelessness or whatever,
right,
and
right.
how they're changing their way of viewing the world, even though they're not 25. Like, I don't
Right.
know about America, just has this weird idea that like you should know everything at
Yeah.
some point, you know, and that's not true. We will constantly have different viewpoints, and we should constantly be learning. And I would assume that your readers are probably older than 40, right? Like that's
Well, and these women are in their 60s. So,
okay.
and almost immediately I started getting reviews from people who said, "Thank you for writing about women who aren't dead yet."
Yes.
Because they're spunky, they're, you know, they still, like, one of them suffers from knee pain and she's got to get a knee replacement, and you know, it's not that they're not, but they're alive. They're, you know,
Yeah.
they're involved in their communities, they're attractive, they take care of themselves. They have very individual personalities. And so I get a lot of compliments on the
Yes.
characters themselves, that people can't wait to see what they do next. And they
Yeah.
get in food fights. I mean, this is, I mean, I have kind of a wacky personality anyway. So they do things that you wouldn't expect women in their 60s to do, but they'll do anything to accomplish what they set out to do.
Right. I love
So
that.
my tagline for them is, "Be fearless like the old maids,"
Yeah.
because and the title comes from the first book, where a friend of theirs dies. She is murdered in a way, and she, but before she dies, they visit her in the hospital, and she says, "Don't be a bunch of old maids," because she lived her life being super controlled by her husband, never really doing what she wanted to do. And if you look up the definition of an old maid, it's not just somebody who's never been married, who's, older. It's somebody who doesn't live their life to the fullest. So they
Right.
decide to become the old maids, and they start
And to live
doing things
opposite.
in the first book that they've always wanted to do but never done.
Yes.
Horseback rides, sing karaoke, those kinds of things.
Yes.
And Julia Applegate, who's the lead character, when another friend dies, literally she falls face first into her peach cobbler dead at the table at their Christmas luncheon. Julia, when they find out that she's been poisoned, Julia says, okay, for my adventure that I'm going to do, I'm going to solve a murder, because she's the mystery reader like me.
Yeah.
She says, I want to, and so they start investigating. That's how they start in
That's
with
wonderful.
investigating murders. Yeah.
I love that because I'm as I creep older, I have three girls, so they're all
Oh, good for
teenagers.
you.
They keep me young, sort of. They tell me I'm 90, but still,
Yeah.
but I'm becoming, I think this is where we become more and more feminist and you start seeing more and more. And I tell my mother and my mother-in-law, like, you have like 25, 30 years left. Like you might as well live them out.
Yeah.
And I'm very lucky to have, two mothers that are living it out their lives. They go and
Good.
they do their things. But I don't think that we've always been represented like that. I think
Oh,
it's we
no.
take care of our families, we do this, and then you're just, I don't know, like we're never represented. You have this sex symbol man who's 60. But what woman do we have that's like that?
Right.
Like you said, we're almost portrayed as like dead. And even I think
Yes.
maybe even the Golden Girls are probably fondly remembered because they were so spunky and
Yes. And
they
this group is
weren't
based
dead.
on the Golden Girls. I
I love
studied the
that.
Golden Girls a lot. I mean, it was a great show and I enjoyed it anyway. But so one of them is a bombshell. Blair is a bombshell blonde who, yes, she's had some plastic surgery and stuff, but she does Pilates and she dresses to kill. And she's on her fourth husband, and she hasn't met a man she doesn't like. And
I
she
love
every
that.
a man want and she's based on a woman that I knew 30 years ago who I she just loved men. And you could watch her physically change when a man walked into the room. She just turned into this sort of undulating, feminine, sexy being. And that's what Blair does. So they're all different.
Yeah.
There's the 30 plus year investigative journalist who can tell you how many words there are in the Webster's Dictionary, and there's a CEO of a big waste management company, and then there's Julia. She's the lead character who was married to the current governor of the state. They're now divorced, and she collects antiques and runs this big bed and breakfast.
Nice.
And she's kind of the leader of the pack in that they all adore her, but she pratfalls. She's constantly tripping, her falling face first into, planters, or tripping somebody else. And so she's humorous in that
Yeah.
respect. I don't know. They're a joy to write, and they're a
Yes.
joy to read, frankly.
I love that. It as you've written out that you have these four women, the old maids, but you've written a male protagonist before with your one set in Southern California, and then your first one, was it a female
It was
protagonist
a
or
female lead, yeah, in her
female?
40s.
Yeah. Okay. So what made you want to go from standalone to series? Is that just sort of a development of, is that the indie author world, which we're all
I
told?
suppose, I'd had the idea for the detective series,
Okay.
and I wrote Mass Murder. So I wrote that first book and published it, and I really liked it. But then for some reason, and it's not that there's not humorous moments in those books, but they're more sort of organic just to the way we have humor in our own lives. Whereas I really wanted to try my hand at something humorous,
Okay.
really not comedy, not the whole thing being comedy, but there is obvious comic elements. And so then I immediately started writing the old maids. And for a while, I'd do an old maids book, and then I'd do a Detective Georgie Savage, and then I'd go back and forth. But the old maids is clearly the
It's
biggest
moving.
audience. And I was getting pushed by those fans. If I took a year off to write a detective one, then I was getting pushed to, like, have you stopped writing the old maids, or have
Okay,
you
so
seen
they're
the
not
last of that?
crossover readers, really. They that you have readers
Some of
for
them are, a lot of my friends read both and love both, but the old maids, because cozy mysteries are really, really popular. It's largely a female audience, although a lot of men enjoy my books too.
They
But
just don't want to say it. Like the romance world, like most men don't want to say it. But I think you're right. I think cozy mysteries are probably right underneath romance. I think they're much more popular. They sell more than
There's a big audience, and I knew that when I was pushing the envelope, because cozies typically don't have any kind of overt bad language, sex, or violence, right? Well, these women talk about sex all the time. There's no real sex in the book, but they're especially because of Blair, because of the character of Blair, they're joking about it, and they're looking at men, and they're, this is why I get, fans to say thanks for depicting older women who aren't dead yet. And then they use shit and damn. That's as far as I go with bad language. And I've gotten a couple of reviewers who go, well, I was a little surprised by the bad language, but I love the book.
That's
So,
so
and
funny.
the crimes are edgy. The crimes are
Right,
edgy.
they're a little bit. It's not
So,
like the theater guy fell down the stairs.
right, exactly. So I knew it right from the beginning. I was pushing the envelope, but again, that was what I
But I
wanted to
think if you have a
do.
good story, people are willing to push through. And but you mentioned too that you had the characters for a while, but it took a while to find the story. And one of my mantras is like, do everything on purpose as an indie writer. You have to per you should really think about things. Even as pantsers, you should still find the story. You should and whatever decision you make, make sure it's on purpose so that whatever review comes in, you say you can leave take it or leave it, right? You know what's happening here. So what tips do you have for writers out there if they have these characters and they're very lovable and everyone loves them and maybe they feel pushed to, write the story, but how did you find the story and what would you tell people to do to find that?
But even as a pantser, I always know the ending. And, even though the endings have changed a little bit sometimes, it's like I know where I'm going in the
Yeah, it's the
book.
seed of the
I'm
ending, right? Like
It's
how you
partly
want it to.
having my background in theater, I visualize everything. It's all a movie to me anyway. So in my I used to joke that, because when my daughter lived in Olympia, I would drive down to see her, and it's about almost exactly an hour drive, and I would work out scenes in the book in my head. And I say, you probably wouldn't be, want to be r driving on the freeway next to me, because
You're
I
like
was in beta
talking.
waves, right? But so I don't outline, plot point by plot point, beat by beat. But I know where I'm going in the book, because I and a couple people in my writers group, I feel badly because they've started really good books that I'm excited about, but they, because they didn't know the ending, they stop halfway through because they get stuck. They don't know where they're going in the
Where they're
story.
going.
So I guess I would always recommend, and that's what happened with that first Old Maids. I got characters, but I didn't really know what the story was going to be, and so I had to stop writing. There was nowhere for me to go until I sat down and I saw that documentary on sex trafficking and said, okay, let's figure out the crime. I mean, because in mysteries, that's what you have to, otherwise there's no reason for the story, right? There's a reason that people start investigating somebody else. And so I had to figure out the crime. You have to figure out how to hide the crime,
Interesting, yeah.
and I don't plot out the clues all the time. Some A few times I'll plot a few of them, but once I kind of have those basics in place, and visually I know how it's going to end, where it's going to end. Like in the at the end of Mass Murder, which was the first detective story, I knew I was going to set it in a Catholic monastery near where I used to live, and I knew that I wanted the ending, the bad guy, to basically get thrown or fall out of the bell tower and land on like a statue that was holding a sword, and he'd be, is it splayed, slayed, splayed like a fish. So
He
I
got
visualized,
justice, is for
yeah,
sure.
I knew how it was going to end. So I had
Yeah.
to write towards that.
Right. Okay. So you got to get him to
So
that bell tower
that's
in
right.
a
That's
okay.
right.
Yes.
So that's kind of how I do it. And sometimes it changes. In one of my old maids book, I clearly knew who I wanted to be the bad guy. And about two-thirds of the way through, as I was kind of creating characters and moving things around, I went, oh, this guy's even better. This is a
Right.
much better bad guy. And so I switched things around.
Yeah, I think
So
that's
it's
important to especially for people who are newer, the more I write, the more I realize 50% of the time is thinking and figuring it out and then not being afraid to say, "Oh, this is better. Change it all." And it's really not as
yes.
much work as you think at first, you know, but if it is going to be better, just change it. It's going to be a better
When I
book.
teach, I always say to my classes that writing, when you're writing a novel, it is largely a series of choices that you make. You know, who's going to be the protagonist? Who's going to be the antagonist? What's the crime going to be? What's the plot going to be? What's the point of view? What's the, you know, you make a series of decisions all the way through. How are you going to reveal this character? How are you going to, what's the climax going to be? You know, what are the points rise in the rising action up to the climax? And like in this last book, I had too much time in the, you know, in the closing and after the climax, and the falling action was like six chapters long, and that's too long. And so I had to make some choices, thinking, well, okay, now how am I going to shorten that up? I wanted this stuff up in here, but you start pulling stuff out, thinking, is it really necessary? Does it really move this? The story is over. All you're basically doing is wrapping things up. I
Right.
like to finish with something strong, that leads people into the next book. But so you're constantly making decisions,
Yes.
and so it's all based on the choices you make.
I really like that. Yeah.
I just did a presentation for women in publishing on creating characters that readers can't quit. And one of the things I talked about was that, you know, a lot of beginning writers will start with sort of that basic level of characterization: height, weight, gender, color of their eyes, what do they sound like? Maybe they have a limp. That'll be really interesting, you know. And then they'll stop there.
Yeah.
And then they just start writing. And what they've done is just created a very shallow version
Right.
of what that character is. And that's,
Like a
at that point,
mugshot more than anything.
that's their choice. They've made those choices.
Right.
They stopped making decisions. They stopped too soon. They didn't
Yes.
build any internal dialogue for that character, any backstory, any, you
Right.
know. And so the characters are shallow, and readers don't care about that. You know, readers want something that they can relate to, that they can engage with. So yeah, so that's
Yeah, I think
kind of
that's
how I
great
approach.
advice though, because especially the making decisions, whether it's your plot or your characters, I really think that at first, when we first start writing, we think that it will just all come to us because we can turn a really good phrase
Yes.
and because we've been told we can write. And that's great. You know,
Yeah.
I tell everyone you've been told you can write because you can. And you can, but it doesn't mean that you don't need to learn your craft, right? And
And there's a difference between writing and storytelling. And novelists need to know both. Those are both very specific skill sets. And because I was so, I mean, how many times in when you're working with people, do they say, I've got a great idea for a book?
You're like, okay, now you got to
Okay.
tell the story. Well, it's kind of
Yeah.
like what you do in your nonprofit, right? I mean, the grant writers can write,
Right.
can they can't can they tell a
They
story
tell a story.
and engage people's pocketbooks
Yeah.
more than anything.
Yeah.
So I really love that. But before we let go, your latest book is No Place Like Home for a Murder. If you guys are watching on YouTube, you can see the cover behind Lynn. Where can people go to buy your books? Where are you
All my
mostly?
books are on Amazon.
Okay.
And let me mention, because I mentioned it to you before, I do have a my one of my non fiction books is
Yes. Oh, yes. Let's talk
the
about that.
little book of unconventional marketing ideas for self-published authors. And this is one of the unconventional marketing ideas I realized during the pandemic
Okay.
when, because I watch a lot of, MSNBC and stuff, and a lot of those, pundits or authors, they'd always have pictures of the books behind them or posters. So, this is one of those things that authors that do podcasts or Zoom meetings, or they have another job and their Zoom meeting, get a poster or get your books behind you so
Okay.
people see that you're an author. So those are
Right.
the kinds of things I talk about in that book.
Well, and this is, I have this written down, but I did want to talk to you about it. And I think people will probably want to hear a little bit about it if you have time. Like
Where did
what
it
have
come
you been
from?
able, like, how did this appear? Is this from your work with nonprofit of getting people
No.
visible, or how did this
For
come
a
about?
while, I put it out last year, and the year before I joined a couple of online writing groups
Okay.
where you'd get on Zoom calls like this with, 5 or 10 other writers. And I was, for one of the groups, I was the only self-published author. So everybody else was trying to get traditionally published. And I started getting asked, well, how do you publish your books? And then I had a couple friends who are in the process of writing,
Okay.
and they know the success I've had, and they wanted to know, how do you promote? How do you promote and publish your books? So I
Yeah.
thought, well, if I'm going to keep getting asked, why don't I just jot it all down? So it's a short book, and I don't do a lot of traditional marketing stuff because I don't have the head for it.
That's what I find so
I don't
interesting is
track my book
you don't
sales.
track it.
I don't
Yeah.
do analytical stuff. I don't chart
Are
metrics.
you doing dances on TikTok though?
Yeah, no, I don't even
No.
belong to TikTok. So, I do some kind of weird stuff, but if you go in and read the reviews to the book, people love it because it's written for people who don't want to spend their life marketing.
I love that. Sign me up.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, because indie authors really do have to do everything, don't we? We
Yes.
have to figure it
Yeah.
all out. It is a business. We are a brand. And I find it fascinating because I was just talking to someone about this probably 8 months ago, where we had joined this book launching group, and it was fine, but I was like, but I have three teenagers. Like, I
Oh,
can't
yeah.
do this. I felt very overwhelmed, and I think it's wonderful. This, well, I'll say it again, the little book of unconventional marketing ideas for self-published authors. Like, I was telling her, there's got to be other ways to do it. It can't
Yeah.
just be this,
Well,
because,
do you know who Mark Dawson is?
yes.
Okay, so everybody knows self-published guru, right? And I bought one of his online classes for book launch. And he talks about, yeah, well, one of the best things you can do is get your beta readers, your advanced copy readers to write a review before, put your print book up first, get reviews on it, and then take it down before you actually launch the whole book itself. And he said, so I send out a note. He said, I've got probably 500 beta readers, and I sent it, and I was just like, I have eight.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? I have eight.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's like, oh, so now I need to go back and find 500.
Just like, yeah,
And I
he.
think that's one of the problems is it's not that it doesn't work. It's that he's beyond the point at which he doesn't even remember
Yes, he has
being
far
where we
over
are.
five 15 I can't he thousands of people on his newsletter mailing list. almost, you know. I have 250. So it you have to scale everything back. And what I say to myself is, what can I do? When I first started, nobody, well, I started when ebooks were pretty new. There wasn't as much competition as there is now either. But I used to drive my daughter nuts because I had book cards made up, like I Vistaprint. Everybody go to Vistaprint, right? A book card with the cover of my book and all the information and where they could get it. And I would put them in my purse and we'd go to Target. We'd be shopping at Target and I'd go over to the book section and I'd find the mystery books and I'd slip them inside the mystery books.
That's
We'd go to the
amazing.
library and I'd go to mystery books and because I think, well, if they're going to buy this book and they'll go, oh, what's this? She would be rolling her eyes as a teenager and
Yes.
leaving me because she didn't
You're
want to
so
do it with me.
embarrassing, Mom.
Yeah, but you do what you have to do.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. And I'm looking at this right now. I'm gonna put the link in the show notes because I think
Oh,
that
good.
this is I mean, I want everyone to read your mysteries as well. Obviously, we'll have links to that as well. But I think this is like solved a certain question for me on there's got to be other things that we can do because personalities are different, lives are different. And if you're called to write, it can't be that you write a book and no one reads it just because you don't know how to
Exactly.
market or you don't have
Exactly.
time. Like, that's not a good answer for our
Exactly.
world. So we're definitely going to have that in the show notes as well. And where can people find you, your books, and more information about you?
Frankly, if they just Google my name, Lynn Bohart, I'm embarrassed to say I'm kind of everywhere partly because of my work. I pop up every time I did a public presentation or I teach a class or whatever. So if they just Google my name, but I'm on Amazon. I'm only on Amazon, so they don't have to go anywhere else. And then my author website is www.lynnbohart-author.com. So that's pretty easy to
Yeah, we'll
find.
have that in the show notes as well. And if anyone's interested in Lynn's nonprofit, if possibly you work for a nonprofit or you're passionate
Please
about a
do.
nonprofit, she has littledogcommunications.com. And we will have that in the show notes as well because I would love for authors to continue to merge their passions together.
Absolutely. I think we should all try to do that. We want to write what we love. We want to sell, and we want people to enjoy them, but we want to enjoy it too. And Little Dog Communications, just so they know, is spelled L-I-L. Little dog.
Little dog,
It's not
yes,
little, it's Little Dog
little dog,
Communications. Yeah.
right? Because you have little dogs at
I little dog is
the
the logo is a little dachshund.
end. I love this logo, but we will definitely have the link in the show notes. So even if you guys are driving, just once you stop and park, you can check the links in the show notes. Otherwise, Lynn Bohart is Bohart. But thank you so much, Lynn, for coming on and talking to us about your writing and your
I
books.
appreciate it so much, Kat. And I love the title of it. I just, you know, it, it's you're very creative and I was looking at all of your books. You're a very eclectic writer,
Yes, this
which
is unfortunate for my marketing.
well, yeah, but you know, again, you're writing things that you love and you're giving people opportunity to read them. So I think it's great.
Well, thank you.